Hi, guys. Here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil, like a lot of it. Yep, that's good. Then I stare at a red light. It's the kind that helps your cells positively glow. Oh, wow, really bright. Okay. Next, I take an ice bath. That's how you melt your fat and fix your, I don't know, other stuff. Ooh, yep, feeling super healthy. Can't feel my toes. Breakfast is raw liver. Okay, here we go. Oh, real good.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
He was the type of person that just couldn't make you believe everything.
And the centerpiece of the entire web is the use of children. For sex.
It was a stunning case that ultimately revealed the secretly perverse lifestyle Wesson had forced his family to lead.
It was more like an organized crime family.
According to Yahweh's law, that was just the way it was supposed to be.
One verse that said, if you don't like him, kill him. I really wish I could find him.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening and for your positive reviews, feedback, and your own personal stories of encountering false prophets, shady leaders, self-help scams, and just any weird person where your gut told you something isn't right here. Hearing your stories and sharing them on future episodes has been really rewarding. So please keep sending them to 7deadlysinnerspodcast@gmail.com and connect with us on Instagram at 7deadlysinnerspodcast, and you can follow me at Rachel N. O'Brien. Rachel spelled R-A-C-H-A-E-L. Okay, I apologize that this episode is later than usual this week. We're doing construction on our home, and my dumbass went down a ladder in socks, getting too cocky about my ladder skills, and I slipped about 8 feet up and slammed my back and side of my leg all the way down before hitting the floor. So, needless to say, I needed a day or two to recover, but I'm back. I mean, I have a giant bruise, but it'll get better. And apparently Greg says, ooh, this is kind of weird for Seven Deadly Sinners that my back, like the bruise and scrape in my back looks like the Virgin Mary, which is actually quite eerie. I didn't even think about that. Okay, so another quick announcement. Now that the world is seemingly starting back up again, I've started planning some future live shows in various cities. The format will be a little lighter, more fun, and interactive. And no, I won't just be talking at you from stage like this, unless, of course, I do stand up at the top of the show for a few minutes. But I instead will recruit a hilarious comedian friend of mine in each city to be my guest co-host on the show. And yeah, I'm just really excited to get back up on stage and to meet all of you guys after the shows, so stay tuned for future date and city announcements. Okay, so this episode and a few other cases this season will be difficult to listen to, especially if the material is triggering to your own experience. With that being said, please take care when listening. And if you have been a victim of sexual assault, know that you are not alone. And the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, also known as RAIN, has a 24-hour resource hotline at 1-800-656-4673. Additionally, in the next few episodes on the Kingston Clan, I want to explicitly state that this is not a direct attack at all on the Mormon religion. In fact, a lot of the Mormon beliefs sound very peaceful and mystical in a way. With that being said, in this episode, we will be talking a ton about polygamy and the psychological effects it has on women, children, and even some men who aren't into it, like our abusive Kingston men at the top.
One of the things that first hit home, her father and her mother were both half-brother and half-sister. Her father had 18 wives, over 200 children now. That's when I realized there was something very seriously wrong going on.
Talked about the business model. Specifically, what does that look like? Why is it important? For example,
that we not open a bank account without that being approved by the office.
The order is a large, secret, billion-dollar organization that has been able to remain underground for decades.
The order has to go to turn in all of their money.
For individuals, it will mean making sure that the money or the income that we get is turned in where it can be used in the place that will give the greatest return.
The order is very, 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 very racist.
You travel from state to state, for most of the nationalities, what's our responsibility?
The order looks at people that are non-white as not even human, as animals.
Polygamy in general is a complicated arrangement. And I think that in many cases, the women choose to be in that life and are very okay with it. And they even see a benefit from it more than just their practicing of their faith. I believe that many view it as a built-in friend, a companionship, a built-in childcare system where it can be looked at from a weird feminist angle where, you know, they can all rotate watching each other's kids while pursuing their careers and know that their children are being taken care of. Like in the case of many popular reality shows about polygamy out there. Full disclosure though, I do think that sometimes, even when I'm watching an interview with some of these women and they are saying they choose this life, I can't help but admit that I see a lot of pain behind their eyes. I know it's not my job to judge someone's reaction or for me as an outsider to decide if they are happy. Everyone is different and they express joy and pain in various ways, but we also can't ignore that there's a certain level of indoctrination and spiritual abuse that leads these women to feel that this is their godly sacrifice, their penance to get into heaven, and in order to get through it, they should just suck it up. However, the biggest issue I'm taking with the polygamous practices within the Kingston clan, in much of the survivor stories I've heard, it is not a place of joy or content, and most importantly, it is often a place of the sexualization of children, grooming, and the fierce physical abuse and also neglect of the children and the multiple sister wives whose basic human needs are ignored and they are forced to live in an emotional prison where they feel, with good reason, that they cannot escape. It's all they know. You see, the Kingston Seven, specifically the most problematic, the current leader, Paul Kingston, I mean, you heard his rousing sermon that sounded like he was reading from a user manual on how to watch grass grow last episode. His abusive, maniacal brother, Gaptooth Danny, aka Daniel Kingston, who would hit the kids with boards and force them to eat rotten food until they threw up. And child sexual abuser. I mean, they all kind of have to be if they've taken underage brides, but the one convicted of child rape and incest was David Kingston, who honestly has that stereotypical creep down the street look mixed with the vibe of someone who looks like they are about ready to cry all the time. Anyway, the list goes on, but we will mostly focus on those three and a few others, and the fact that the Kingston Group has not only been called a dangerous organized crime family, but also one of the largest sex crime organizations in America.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, Central Ohio. The Nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the Nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. and there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. CODA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist CODA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at CODA.com. That's C-O-T-A.com. Good luck to all the runners.
The gluttony you must have to treat humans like throwaway items bred for your labor force to make you more money and give you more power is astonishing. And like we learned from episode 1, it didn't just start with Paul Kingston as the leader. It started much before with former leaders Ortel and Eldon Kingston. But as the saying goes, old sins cast long shadows. And this group's sins are not only basically in the DNA of the kids to come, it's a generational trauma that is packaged as God's will, and it's escalating and compounding. And one of the ways they are reinforcing control and abuse is through the practice of polygamy and incest to keep their bloodline pure. Let's define polygamy first, though, because a lovely listener sent me an email kind of differentiating between the term polygamy and what it means to be polyamorous and the term polygyny. I'm going to define this, but then still for the rest of the episode, refer to their practices as polygamy, as that is what's most recognizable to the general public. The website that the listener referred me to is called morethan2.com. And she did this so I could better understand the differences between what the Kingston group is practicing and what her parents, who are in a healthy, happy, consensual, polyamorous marriage, are practicing. Here's the difference. The website posed a question stating this regarding being in a polyamorous relationship. Quote, "Isn't this all some sexist, misogynistic, male-dominated, fundamentalist Mormon thing, like on that HBO show Big Love?" The response? No, the image that many people have in their heads of one man with many women as the HBO series is technically polygyny. Polygyny is the form of polygamy where a man can have more than one female partner, but women are not allowed to have more than one male partner. In societies where polygyny is practiced, women are usually seen as little more than property. Since people have this mistaken notion of polyamory, it's easy to understand why they think of polyamory means disrespect of women. But polyamory is not polygyny. Polyamory applies equally to everyone. In an ethical polyamorous relationship, the same opportunities are afforded to everyone regardless of their sex. Polyamory is not about collecting a bunch of women for your harem. In the Kingston clan, however, if a woman was to be with another man, it would be cheating and punishable by the highest court of God. But a man can take as many wives as he sees fit, and the women just have to take it. While researching this, I came across a beautiful writer and human in general, Carol Lynn Pearson, who struggled with her faith and the pain she and many other Mormon women feel in regards to polygamy and the concept of eternal polygamy and the sealing practice. Carol, whose side note is still a believing, faithful Mormon, but fights to turn the old Mormon doctrines on their head, and not only speaks out for women's rights and the banishing of eternal polygamy in her book, The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, but she is also a huge LGBTQ supporter and even stayed best friends with her late husband, who, despite them early on trying to pray to change the fact that he was gay, ended up accepting him and cared for him in his dying days as he succumbed to a battle with AIDS in the 1980s. This partially led her to examine what is known as eternal polygamy, which as an offshoot leads many widows to seem undesirable to any future mate after her husband has died. How incredibly grim that you may have to live your life alone till your dying day if you lose your husband, who, yes, you love dearly, but you may have found another companion after their death that you also love. It's just the most unfair scenario for a woman. Again, I'm not attacking the Mormon religion, and all of this research came from a current devoted Mormon woman. On her website about her book, The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, the author claims that this practice leads to large numbers of loyal members, especially women, to fear heaven, to withhold love in marriages, to doubt their own worth, to lose faith in God, and often leave the church. In researching this book, Ms. Pearson reached out to Mormons and former Mormons via social media in March 2014, asking for their feelings on eternal polygamy and the unequal sealing policies that reflect it. On the first day, more than 2,400 people took the survey, and within 4 weeks, the number of respondents exceeded 8,000. The results, along with Pearson's own personal narrative and dramatic glimpses into history, weave a story that has never been told before. Here's some of their responses. Quote, I live in constant fear that I will die before my husband and he will be sealed to a second wife, meaning I will live in a polygamous relationship for eternity. I've told him if this happens, I will choose hell over heaven, and he believes me. This is hard on our marriage. In another scenario, quote, a nice Mormon guy hung up the phone when he found I was a sealed widow. He said, why would I want to love someone in this life and then turn her over to her first husband for eternity, along with the children that came from my very own DNA and now belong to him? And then this is how a man felt. Quote, when I was a teenage boy, I thought it was cool to look forward to lots of sex with my circle of wives in heaven. Now the idea of eternal polygamy disgusts me. No way do I want my wife to feel like I have all of her and she doesn't have all of me. Crazy stuff, this doctrine. End quote. And the Kingston clan takes us to a whole new level, as much of the time, the young brides were taught to start thinking of their future polygamous married life around the age of 10 or 11, having it being taught to them in the fifth grade. And in some very creepy cases, a man 20 plus years older than them has already claimed that God put it upon him that one day that little girl will be one of his wives. There are even weird stories of a man seeing a baby in her carriage, and later, when the girl is of marrying age, which is as young as 14 years old, and then he would proclaim that he knew when she was a baby, she was meant to be one of his wives. So then, in the Kingston group, they are then married off, per Paul Kingston's direction. Sure, they are told they can have their own opinion on who they can marry, but it must go through the chain of command of first their dad, who then speaks to Paul, and then Paul essentially decides that they will only marry within the Kingston bloodline. So it's framed as a choice, but it's 100% not. Anyway, so Paul usually refers them to marry their first or second cousins, sometimes their uncles, half-brothers, the incestuous list goes on. So first, the girls are already brainwashed into thinking that this is the only way they are going to heaven. They have to be okay with marrying a close family member, and then they need to start having kids immediately. So then these girls wake up 10 years down the road, and their little teenage mind has grown into adulthood, but now they have 5, 10, 20 plus kids, and no proper education, and really no way of leaving, as all of their money is tied up in the Kingston clan's bizarrely cult-like run bank system. And essentially, if you leave, you're likely never getting your hard-earned money to take with you.
Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your entire
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus plans November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
I'm reiterating a little bit of what we talked about in the first episode, but I'm trying to set the stage for the more horrific and dramatic examples that are coming shortly. Polygamy and sealed eternal marriage can lead to an extremely pained and lonely life. The women's feelings of natural jealousy or of loneliness and neglect go dismissed. Basically, they just need to shine it on and suck it up for the order. On one heartbreaking episode of the show Escaping Polygamy, where a first wife within the order finally makes the decision to leave the marriage between her husband, several other wives, and one of them being her own sister. Here's her story.
I didn't grow up in the order, but my sister was a part of the Kingston group 8 years prior before I was married. She was like a mother to me. My mom walked out of our life when I was 9, and she took the role of a mother, and she really felt strongly that I needed to be a part of her family. She would tell me that she felt like if I didn't do this, then I would lose my eternal salvation. My sister has 15 children with my husband. I have 10 children with my husband, and the third wife has 6 children. I see my husband every third night. The other 2 nights when I'm not with my husband, it's really hard. It's sometimes devastating and you're lonely. Thinking about my husband with another woman, I have to blank that out because it's too hard. And having it be that it was my sister was even harder. You just sometimes think, you wish you could just wake up from that bad dream because you just wish he could just, you know, just be yours. When my children started leaving one by one, that was the last straw for me, because anybody that tells you that your family is no longer your family, that's not of God. That's not a religion to me.
I'm so proud of Lori and her brave kids. It's not easy to leave, but she did it. And now that I've primed you with that depressing anecdote, let's talk about how dangerous the grooming and sexualization of little girls is within the order. Polygamy and how it can play out as grooming has even been written and distributed in essays and teen curriculum in schools within the last 10 years. I don't necessarily believe that their aim was to condone grooming, but the undertones certainly imply a blind faith attitude taught to young girls that even if they don't initially like it, their faith will guide them to like it eventually. The order holds dances where the grooming often begins. According to former members who have escaped, they said that in recent years, the rules may have changed, they've heard rumors, but when they were there, this is how it went. Leering older men would walk up to a little girl and they would ask her to dance. And the little girl, per the rules of the order, was not allowed to say no. So these men could have their pick with no pushback, no matter the age of the girl that they wanted to dance with. Taking a girl's voice away has to be one of the worst things you can do. According to an interview on the Survivors podcast with Val Snow, a former member who escaped and is living his best gay life now, he said that his sister did start to push back and said no to the older men or anyone she didn't feel comfortable with. So good on her and Val, but this is very, very rare. Recently, the Salt Lake Tribune published that Mormon series that I mentioned earlier that included dangerous language that could influence young girls to be groomed by men and people in power. A psychologist, Christy Money, who has a PhD from BYU and is an active believing Mormon woman, took issue with this, especially because she has worked in prison settings rehabilitating sex offenders. Christy wrote an op-ed response that said this: "The newest essay on polygamy explains that Joseph Smith was directed by God to take plural wives, including 14-year-olds, and encourages readers to learn from stories of women who obeyed in spite of their initial repulsion to the idea. Quote, like polygamy's participants, we see through a glass darkly and are asked to walk by faith. Because this essay will be available online and included in teen curricula, I am worried the good motives driving this essay might unintentionally lead to negative consequences. Here's why. I've worked in prison rehabilitating sex offenders. I am well-versed in victim grooming patterns. These include establishing a relationship of trust, often with age or other authority, convincing victims that their proposal isn't wrong, and afterward, ensuring that the victims remain silent." End quote. In the Kingston clan, the little girls are also taught that it's okay to dress sexy for your future husband, and are additionally encouraged to dress in short skirts or low-cut tops to appear older when illegally working for Kingston clan-owned businesses. But young girls are not the only ones who suffer. Val Snow, who I mentioned earlier, was kicked out because he was gay. And then this boy, who absolutely breaks my heart in his retelling of hearing his mom die of cancer, and who was essentially punished for saying that she needed medical care. Here is his telling of his story on escaping polygamy.
My parents are John Daniel Kingston and Patricia Robinson. My mom only had 13 kids. Growing up in a polygamous family, my mother was the third wife of 14, and my mom was like the most hardworking person there is. She would basically work all day, all night, so that she can support her kids without my dad's help. She always tried to have just some food on the table, either beans, rice, or something. My mom, she's super amazing. Definitely someone you can look up to. When the doctor diagnosed her with colon cancer, she did have the early stages, and I believe that she could have got better if she would have got chemo. But the way I was raised in the order, we would avoid doctors at all costs. They told us they have a plan and that my dad's gonna help her get well. Everything my mom did was for the order, and my mom never wanted to disappoint my dad or go against him. So she did what what my dad thought or said would make her better. My dad had a thing like that was like this, that was supposed to shoot like radio waves or something like that, that she would sit between for about 2 hours a day, and it was supposed to somehow get rid of the cancer. I lived in the basement and she lived right above me, so I could hear when she didn't go to sleep, and I could hear how I can hear her coughing, choking, and throwing up. They told us that she was throwing up cancer. And right when they said that, I was just like, there's no way that you can just throw up cancer. We were getting lunch ready. And then at like about 2:15, then she stopped breathing.
And if that isn't enough, his little sister committed suicide at 14 years old within the order. 14 years old. Mental health is a very complicated subject and needs to be treated by proper medical professionals. The Kingston Seven are not doctors of any kind, are not equipped to handle someone's physical or mental health. But in the order, you're not allowed to go to the doctor, a therapist, anything. Those leaders should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. And at this point, not only were the young people starting to see that polygamy wasn't for them, they were also seeing incest wasn't for them, as they had witnessed with their own eyes what it can do. The prevalent incest going on has not only damaged future generations to come, but the Kingstons certainly have blood on their hands when it comes to their bullshit fear of doctors and forcing the women to give birth to babies at home without proper medical care. For years, they got around this by not getting a birth certificate for the first few years of the child's life because so many babies were being born with terrible birth defects and dying not long after birth. They needed a way to cover it up. And here's a little backstory on their incest and the issues it has caused. I've always been fascinated by genetics and my ancestry and the Punnett square. Yeah, I'm a bit of a nerd, so what? But throw some dominant genes into that chart with a recessive gene like brown hair or blonde hair to see what the likelihood of each result would be when the genes are combined. It only works if the genes are independent of one another. There are also many different genes that combine to produce a characteristic like eye color, for example. This model gets a whole lot trickier when recessive genes are brought into the mix by both parties, say where genetic diseases are concerned. And to plot out the potential genetic risks of a child of incest in the polygamous Kingston clan, well, hold on to your seat. Now, really, I am far from a geneticist, and sometimes bloodlines get complicated. But for centuries, royal families have sought to keep their bloodlines pure. In fact, according to National Geographic, while virtually every culture in recorded history has held sibling or parent-child couplings as forbidden, some royal families have often embraced such pairings over hundreds of years, including in ancient Egypt, Inca, Peru, and at times Central Africa and a handful of others. And while royal families in Europe avoided sibling incest, many family members often married cousins. The Spanish Habsburgs, who ruled for nearly 200 years, frequently married among close relatives. Their dynasty ended in 1700 with the death of King Charles II, whose body was so overcome with health and development problems that he didn't talk until he was 4 or walk until he was 8, and he died at age 38. Major health problems spawned by incest has made the practice a near universal taboo. Overlapping genes can backfire in some pretty deadly ways because, for starters, siblings share approximately half of their genes and their DNA, as do their parents and their offspring. First cousins share about 12.5% of their DNA. Choosing to procreate with close relatives can raise the danger that harmful recessive genes, especially when combined repeatedly across generations, can join together. This can lead to elevated chances of major health and/or developmental problems, perhaps producing King Tut's partially cleft palate and congenitally deformed foot, or King Charles II's small stature and impotence. So why has this practice been ongoing for centuries in the face of dire consequences? Well, even though the hazards of such unions are quite real, they are not necessarily a guarantee. Surprisingly, the high rates of genetic overlap produced in the offspring of sibling unions can create seemingly more healthy children than sick ones. I would argue that hundreds of years ago, even a healthy-looking child born to a brother and sister would probably have a myriad of issues unseen to the naked eye, but again, I'm not a geneticist or a doctor. According to an article in Psychology Today, a group of genetic counselors reviewed the research on the biological consequences of reproduction between relatives. They found a 4% increase in birth defects among children of married cousins. Researchers examined 4 studies on the effects of first-degree incest on the health of the offspring. 40% of the children were born with autosomal recessive disorders, congenital physical malformations, or severe intellectual deficits. And another 14% of them had mild mental disabilities. The odds that a child who is the product of brother-sister or father-daughter incest will suffer an early death, a severe birth defect, or some mental deficiency approaches 50%. I seriously feel like I just got thrown back to 4th grade and I'm reading aloud for the first time. Reading hard words aloud, very difficult, guys. Okay, where does the Kingston clan fit into all of this? And why does a pure bloodline carry so much weight in the organization? Quote, "My father experimented inbreeding with his cattle, and then he turned to his children," Connie Rugg told the Herald Journal. Connie is one of an estimated 65 children of John Ortel Kingston, who married a series of half-sisters and nieces. John Ortel considered himself to be a geneticist. His theories on the subject led him to attempt to purify his own family pedigree, because he believed he was a direct descendant of Jesus Christ, with a lineage stretching back to Abraham himself. John Ortel saw his bloodline as a spiritual birthright. After all, Sarah was Abraham's half-sister, and the pair spawned the chosen seed of Israel. Incest was prevalent in biblical times, but proved to be a great stigma and weakness of the Kingston clan doctrine. John Ortel wanted to protect and perfect his own lineage and bloodline, implementing the practices of marriages to close relatives throughout the Kingston clan. His polygamous and incestual pairings caused abnormalities from dwarfism to blindness. Some children were born with undersized heads or fingernails, microcephaly, and kidney problems. Luann Kingston was one of John Ortel's daughters and niece. She spoke of the birth complications and abnormalities in the book Secrets and Wives by Sanjiv Bhattacharya. Quote, I have a half-brother, Russell, who married his cousin on his mom's side. They have three kids with microcephaly. His second wife has one too, and there are also dwarves. Luann went on to describe several deaths due to multiple deformities, saying stillbirths would happen all too often. She recalled one baby being born with no eyes or arms or legs that looked like a tomato, in her words, alleging that the family buried this tomato in the backyard without telling authorities. No report made of birth or death. John Ortel said these casualties of interbreeding were a result of sin. His explanation? Any perfect child was worth any number of stillborn or mutations. Luann believes several tiny mangled skeletons have been fed to the worms in the Kingston backyards. Quote, they don't announce.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. Coda riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist Coda customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at coda.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
The birth or death when stillborns happen. They just bury the baby, she said. Mark Shurtleff, Utah Attorney General, spent years investigating the organization's genealogical data and birth certificates. In 2006, with 80 search warrants for DNA samples and other evidence, Mark was set to conduct a SWAT-type sweeping raid of several Kingston properties. For whatever reason, the Attorney General changed his mind and decided to work through the Kingston family attorney. And then the warrants were never served. In a written statement to the Salt Lake Tribune, family member Rachel Young stated, quote, we are a small group of people. We encourage our young people to choose companions within their own faith. This makes some related marriages inevitable. To deny the right to marry within our faith would in effect deny us the right to exist. She contested that Utah authorities are targeting her community because of their religious beliefs, adding that millions of people practice kinship marriages. Rachel is married to her first cousin, Eldon Kingston, and added, quote, the mass collection of DNA continues the state's effort to catalog, track, and mark members of the fundamentalist community. She also insisted that children named in search warrants are, quote, healthy and happy with no birth defects. In 2005, a Phoenix New Times article revealed that up to 20 children living in northern Arizona and southern Utah had a rare debilitating syndrome known as fumarase deficiency. At the time, there were only a few cases worldwide. The disease can lead to premature death, and it sounds absolutely terrible. Severe mental retardation and physical deformities. Children that can't walk or sit upright and have major speech impediments and seizures that can lead to coma. Children that have feeding problems, microcephaly, and profound developmental delay with IQs of less than 25. Their brains are strangely shaped and are frequently missing large areas of brain matter that have been replaced with water. The biggest concern, according to the article, was that the recessive gene that triggers the disease was rapidly spreading to thousands of individuals living in these communities because of decades of inbreeding. Thousands of these individuals may carry the recessive gene that causes this condition, and the risk is magnified through the continuous cycle of inbreeding. It is a third-degree felony under Utah law for anyone to have sex with a close relative, punishable by a prison term of up to 5 years. More specifically, such relatives, according to the law, include an ancestor, descendant, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, nephew, or niece. Marriages between first cousins are prohibited unless the couple is 55 and sterile or over the age of 65. The law applies to half-blood, adoptive, and when a marriage is intact, step-parent-child relationships. First cousin marriages are permitted in many foreign countries and at least 25 U.S. states. Half-sibling marriages are not allowed in any states. The Kingston clan has engaged in first cousin marriages as well as marriages between half-siblings and uncles and nieces. Surprisingly, though, only a small number of the Kingston clan members have been charged with incest. The first of whom, David Kingston, made national headlines for his trial in 1999. David served nearly 4 years in prison for felony incest and unlawful sexual contact with a minor, his 16-year-old niece. And while David was in prison, former member who escaped remembers it when she was a kid. The teachers at her school would tell her that they needed to pray for David because he was being unlawfully imprisoned. And now she knows why he was in prison, and she's horrified. I want to end this episode with one of the girls who blazed the trail for others to leave and is still working today to help others escape this horrific abuse. She is one of the stars of Escaping Polygamy. I think it's best to tell it in her words, as it is her story. Here are a few shortened excerpts from her really, really well-written blog, and I encourage you to go there and read more as well. It's jessicachristensenblog.com. And here's her story. One summer evening, my 16-year-old birth mom labored into the morning. I was born in a one-bedroom apartment with no windows in a downtown Salt Lake City old factory business building that was known as the Dixon Building to order members back in 1988. But my birth certificate says I was born way across town at my grandparents' house in Kearns. Hashtag magic. Why did my parents have to lie about that? Was the apartment not supposed to be a place of residence? I know I was born at the Dixon Building because I was told my birth story multiple times by a few different people, and no one ever said I was born at my grandparents' house, except my birth certificate. Wait, just a thought. Was it because my birth mom was 16 years old and the man who impregnated her was over 30? Nah, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Hashtag the sarcasm is thick. No reason to even hide that fact or raise suspicion that a 16-year-old delivered a baby in the basement of the historic Chocolate Factory building, also known as the Dixon Building. Wait, the brain wheels are turning now. I just had another epiphany. They were probably worried it looked like a sex ring down there or a factory of human trafficking. But don't worry, it's not that at all. These 15 and 16-year-olds are in love with their 30-year-old spiritual husbands, and they would like everyone to bow out of their life so they can be consenting adults in their marriage as plural wife. At least that's what I heard my birth mom and her entourage say in their video with Senator DeBacus in 2017. Hashtag, I can't even go there. Anyways, back to day one for me in the basement of a building that was my 16-year-old mom's one-bedroom apartment. I was told I was 15 days late, which is ironic because my sperm DNA came from Daniel Kingston, who is number 15 as a numbered man in the order. She continues, speaking of polygamy problems, my birth certificate had some random made-up name, hashtag fraud. Now, how would I have some random last name of Foster when nobody I know had the name Foster? And where did they come up with my made-up father, named Michael Foster, that they put
on my birth certificate. Hashtag more fraud. I had always hoped it wasn't made up and someday my real father would show up and rescue us all. But no, it was all fake to mislead the fact that we were Kingston polygamous kids of Daniel Kingston. Hashtag lies. Hashtag it's okay to lie to protect the order. So for 15 years of my life, I lived in polygamy as Stephanie Foster. I'll have to explain in another post why I changed my name to Jessica at the age of 18. 15 years may not seem like much, but it was my whole childhood. In fact, all my childhood memories are in polygamy, and being raised in the Kingston Order Group were far from a healthy childhood. Now for the final tip of the iceberg on why she escaped. She writes, Christmas Day, 2003. Quote, let's get a picture of all the girls who will be married this year, I hear Daniel say at the family Christmas party. He starts calling my unmarried older sisters over one by one. Then I hear, Stephanie. I start walking to the wall where the other girls are standing thinking, wow, I can't believe I'm going to be married. I was terrified. I was excited. This was going to be great. I would have more control of my life. I can work where I want to go. I can go back to school. I started thinking of all the things I could do once I was married. Well, week of Christmas/New Year's, I met with Daniel and Paul to finish my last, quote, tests and preparations before marriage. I was told that because my older sister ran away after getting married and causing a lot of problems for the order from the highly publicized case where my father Daniel nearly beat her to death, us girls who were being married before the age of 18 had to prove our loyalty to the order and our future husbands. At this point, I was already being sexually assaulted by my future polygamous husband, so I had assumed it was my test to keep that relationship quiet and protect him. Daniel further proceeded to tell me that I needed to do a trial run, living outside of my mother's home, and have another mother report on my behaviors. He moved me to the Washakie Ranch and told me to work in the barn slaughtering cows and preparing the meat for the order. I protested and begged for another test, but soon realized that following instructions would be my best course of action. So I packed my warmest clothing, cleaned my room, and moved to Washakie, which is near the border of Idaho and Utah. Then, January 2004. My days consisted of waking up at 6:30 a.m. to eat breakfast, get ready in the warmest layer of clothing that I could, and make it to meditation at 7 a.m. Meditation signified the beginning of the workday and morning meeting. In the order, everyone meditates for 5 minutes three times a day at 7, 12, and 7 p.m. Following meditation, we would have the morning meeting, and then by 8 a.m., I would be in the barn where I worked with one other person until lunchtime. The lunch hour began with meditation at 12 and then prayer for the food. By 1 p.m., we were back at the barn until about 5 to 6 p.m., depending on how long it took to clean up the knives and blood and meat for the evening, which we would begin to do at 5 p.m. I would shower, have dinner, meditate, and then end the evening with family prayer, personal prayers, and bedtime. This was my life, proving my loyalty to the order and being watched by the people at the ranch and in the home which I was staying. My behaviors were reported to Daniel. I had people calling to talk to me some evenings to further my testing. One particular hard night, a few weeks in, I had a phone call with Daniel's 9th wife, Laura Fuller. She is now one of the order's attorneys. I was telling her how hard the work was, how miserable it was, and how miserable I was. I opened up to her about fears of getting married to a much older man and not wanting to get married. I shared that I just wanted to go back home to my mom's house. Her replies were warm and supportive. She reminded me of my duty as a woman in the order and future wife and mother. She reminded me that God has called me to become a wife. She reminded me that I am Daniel's daughter and that I need to be an example. She shared that she, too, was feeling many of the same emotions and fears that I was before she married Daniel. She shared that she did not want to marry him, but she did what the Lord called her to do, and now her life is blessed because of it, and that mine would be, too. I felt like that was a really productive conversation. I was re-motivated to get back into the Lord's work for me and continue preparing for my marriage. The 42-year-old uncle that I was to marry came to visit me each week I was at Washakie. I would spend my lunch break with him in his vehicle or the cabin at Washakie. I really looked forward to his visits to break up the hard work and reminded me there was a prize at the end of this trial/test. Remember, she is 15, he is 42, and she is 0% able to consent to this. So then it's the first week of February 2004. She said, I was having another really hard week, losing my spirits, missing my siblings, and just really struggling with the will to live, while being excited and terrified to get married. I don't know why I was terrified, because this man was already assaulting my body, yet I was still terrified. Daniel called me toward the end of the week and said, how would you like to come home for the last part of your test? I wanted to cry and scream yes, but I was so calm and reserved over the phone, not sure if what I was hearing was real. I wanted and would have done anything to go home, be with my siblings, sleep in my own room, but was so afraid this was going to be a trick and part of another test, so I remained calm and listened. Daniel and my mother, Heidi, were both on the phone telling me they were going to Las Vegas for a conference for advanced copy order business, and offered that I could come live at home for the week to watch the kids. At this time, I was the oldest of 10 children born to my mother, Heidi. So then the week of February 9th came. I came home on Saturday evening, February 7th, from Washakie. Heidi and Daniel left on Sunday the 8th, and I was in charge of the 6 of our 10 children ages 2 through 12. So come Monday morning, February 9th, we were on our own. And I was the big girl, showing that I was ready for my marriage. Things were going well that first day alone, and I loved being home. In the middle of the night, on Monday night, I woke up to a man on top of me trying to take my pants off. I was in my mother's bed with other siblings in the room sleeping. I was terrified and then realized it was this 42-year-old uncle named Arlen that I was going to be marrying. I still fought him off and convinced him to leave my clothes on and leave because my siblings were there. The next night, he showed up again. This time, I could tell he was freshly showered and that he wasn't going to leave, so I went to my own room. On the third night, we talked about our wedding and he told me it was going to be in the next few months. He and Daniel were both telling me how well I was doing, proving myself ready for marriage. Then it was Friday, February 13th. On this morning, Andrea and I still had not decided what we were going to do for our crazy last thing before I was married. After the school-age kids were off with their ride to school, Andrea missing for the second day in a row, we pulled out our list. We did an eeny, meeny, miny, mo to determine which one we were going to do among the ideas. When it landed on getting our ears pierced, I wasn't sure how we were going to accomplish that. I had watched in movies when girls did it with ice, a needle, and an apple, but I was also worried about them being even. We thought about going to the mall, but needed a way to get there, and needed to get to the orders bank so I could dry out cash. My mom's van was in the driveway parked the entire week, but the keys were at Advance Auto, the orders auto mechanic business. I had driven a few times before at Washakie, and I figured I was getting married soon, turning 16 soon, and I was just thinking I was such a big girl. So I called my 42-year-old soon-to-be husband to take me to the orders bank and asked him if it was okay if I got my ears pierced. He told me that it was not his favorite thing about his second wife because she had pierced ears, but if it was truly what I wanted, then he was okay with it. I drew out my cash, and then we stopped at Advance Auto where I picked up my mom's keys, and he drove me back home after filling up my body. The next day, Andrea and I were talking about my wedding and preparing some of the decor we had already purchased. We were reminiscing on the good memories and how, quote, when I'm married, she can come have sleepovers. It was going to be so awesome to be married. I was excited. Andrea and I decided that we should do that one last crazy thing, so we decided officially we're getting our ears pierced. That night, when my sexual abuser, disguised as my future husband, came for his nightly visit after who knows what he did with his wife, I told him about the idea. He thought it was great and that it would be a great way for me to stay connected with Andrea after I was married, because he knew how close we were as sisters and friends. When I got home, Andrea and I set out on our mini adventure. After 10 minutes or so, we headed to Valley Fair Mall to get our ears pierced at Claire's. When we arrived, the lady said that we needed a driver's license number to fill out the paperwork. I told her that my license was at home, but I could call and get the number. That didn't work. So then I decided to call my aunt. I thought of her. She's my mother's younger sister, and she had left the order a few years ago. I decided I would see if she'd be willing to sign for us. So I called her, told her about our idea to get our ears pierced, and I told her that we went to Claire's, but they needed someone willing to sign for it. At first she said no, but then said she'd be willing to meet us there. The aunt arrived. She asked us a little bit about our lives and why we were getting our ears pierced. We kept our answers short and were very careful not to tell her I was getting married soon. She signed for us, we picked out our studs, paid for them, and headed back home. Then it was Sunday, February 15th, 2004. The next day, in the van, Heidi noticed my ears were pierced. She immediately asked me how I was able to pierce them. I told her that I did it on my own with a needle, ice, and an apple. I was in the front seat of the van, and I looked back to Andrea, silently signaling her to cover her ears with her hair. But my mother, Heidi, looked back as well and saw her ears were pierced too. She was so upset and kept telling us how we would have to tell Daniel and that he would be upset. After the meeting, Daniel came up to us and asked how we did as babysitters. My mother said, "They did really good, except one thing. Show 'em, girls." We each took both our hands and swept our hair on both sides behind our ears, revealing our newly pierced ears. We were standing in the crowded main room where church is held. Daniel looked at us and proceeded to ask about why we got them pierced, how we got them pierced. Honestly, I'm not even sure of everything he was saying. It was very clear he was angry, but that people kept interrupting him, as all of his wives and other people had to say bye to him on their way out. The room became emptier. He continued to talk. Then, at some point, the lights were flickering. We looked over to see that the last people who would be locking the doors were waiting on us. I began to anticipate the worst, but I wanted to be hopeful. They said we needed to meet him at his office. At the office, Daniel sat at his L-shaped desk, which covered most of the room. Our mother Heidi sat in a chair at the small walkway to get around the desk to his chair. Andrea and I were sitting on a little couch in front of the large desk and had a straight pathway to the door. Daniel proceeded with his conversation about the plan of salvation, marriage, being a woman, what it meant to be a young lady in the order. He pulled down a picture of his mom from the shelf where she was wearing earrings in the picture and asked why it was okay that she wore them. We guessed with answers like she got permission, she didn't know any better, times were different back then, but none of those were the answer. Daniel proceeded to lecture us while the tension in the room increased. I was scared where the night was going. I was scared and angry with myself for getting Andrea into this mess. At some point in the conversation, Daniel jumped over the desk and grabbed my neck, telling both Andrea and I to take the earrings out. My mother sat and watched. Andrea frantically fumbled with her earrings to get them out, and I sat there listening to Daniel yell, making physical threats. Then he began counting down from 10, while my thoughts were racing. The closer he got to 1, I realized the reality that it didn't matter I was 15 and about to get married. He was most definitely going to beat me if I did not obey. I started frantically trying to get the earrings out, and they wouldn't budge. Just as he said 1, I said, "I need a mirror." He replied, "You know where it is." While he let go of the grasp he had on my neck and jolted my head, I got up and walked out of his office, down the hall to the restroom. I almost turned into the dark restroom with the open door when I looked over and saw the door to the exit into the lobby and thought, why am I staying here when I know what he's going to do? I opened the door and slowly walked into the foyer, down the small set of stairs on my left, into the lobby area, and right out the front door. I don't know what I was thinking. A part of me was numb, and I was just doing. I paused right outside the front door, wondering what was next. Then I started walking down the steps toward the street in the dark. I turned left toward the lit gas station and started walking. What am I doing? I think. And just then, I hear a slam behind me. I turn around to see my father, John Daniel Kingston, bursting out the front door of the office building and looking toward the parking lot, then right at me. Terror fills my body as I start running toward the people standing at the bus stop. As I frantically say, "Can you help me?" they responded in Spanish, so I take off into the gas station for help. No one is there. No one is at the register or anywhere in the gas station that I can see. I panic and I run to the back room on the right side of the register, hoping to find someone who could help me. Just as I walked into the office area with cleaning supplies, I heard the bell ding, indicating that someone entered the gas station. I knew it had to be Daniel, so I quickly hid behind the door, grabbing the mop and holding it upside down close to my body, ready to fight, but also hoping it will keep me hidden if he checks back here. I stand there frozen. I realized what I had just done, and I had no idea what I was going to do from this moment on. I stood there for a long time in my thoughts while my heart was pounding. I thought about how I got here and what my options were. I had no idea what I was going to do. When I felt ready, I put the mop down and ventured out into the gas station customer area. I found the cashier in the freezer section stocking soda, and I asked her if I could use the phone. She asked me if I was the girl that everyone was looking for, and if she needed me to call the cops. We had a small conversation. I told her not to call the cops and that I was going to call someone to come get me. Jessica eventually called her aunt, who came to pick her up, but her journey wouldn't end there. She was sent to live with family members where her future husband would tell her to go ask if she could go on walks so he could pick her up and abuse her. The courts got involved. Her mom, Heidi, and Daniel were served with a protective order, and the rest played out in court. Stephanie would eventually be free and change her name to Jessica Christensen to protect herself from the order. She married, has beautiful children, and is living a beautiful life. Here's how she sums up her journey on her blog. "Wow, I cannot believe that I have hit the day where half of my life was in polygamy and now half of it has been out of polygamy. I was told as a teenage girl trying to leave polygamy and navigate life on the outside, quote, as many years as they fucked you up, it will take that many to recover and heal. I thought to myself, no, I'm not waiting 15 years to be okay and not being able to function. Now here I am, reflecting back on the journey, realizing how much truth there was in that healing takes time. My determination to not live a life of struggle because of my past and seek mental health services has helped me in so many ways. I can sit here and tell you 15 years later that I have maybe only 10 nightmares a year, when it used to be multiple a night. I can tell you that not only am I surviving, but I am thriving. The emotional and mental health journey is extremely difficult, but it is worth it. The order is still operating in secret today, but finally is picking up speed on getting some very public backlash with a huge FBI raid and pending prison time that could follow. Next week, we will conclude this series on the Order's financial crimes and the economic and financial panic and hardship that escapees face on the outside. Thank you guys so much for listening, and if you're enjoying the show, the best thing you can do is to tell a friend, leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts, and tag us in your Insta story when you're listening. We love hearing from you. Thank you.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.